Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality. That's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Friday, May 3rd, 2024, the 1,199th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening ad-free through a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. With your paid subscription, you are also invited to the weekly members-only live stream each and every Wednesday afternoon. You can become a subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com for $50 a year or $5 a month. And in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. Anyone who understands the roller coaster we've been on these past few years knows we haven't reached the end yet, and there may still be hard times to come. And as we add $1 trillion to the national debt every 100 days, we could be headed for some shaky financial times. If you're like me, you're figuring out how to diversify and make sure some seeds are planted for whatever may come. And that's one of the many reasons I think Bitcoin is part of our future. But it's not only about money. Bitcoin looks to be a critical part of the next generation of technology, communications, energy, verification, and even national defense. I'd encourage everyone to do their research and do it now. And if you're convinced of the likelihood that Bitcoin is an essential part of our future, then you'll need an on-ramp. I recommend River. River empowers you to grow your portfolio without any unwanted surprises and eliminates third-party custodians, putting you in control of your assets. Open an account with no minimum purchase requirement. You can get your Bitcoin journey started with just $1. Visit partner.river.com/reasonable to create your River account today. That's partner.river.com/reasonable. Now, I know that many of you out there understand the need to diversify assets, or maybe you're looking to protect your retirement savings, but you're not quite there yet on Bitcoin and you feel better about precious metals. I get that too. I think going in multiple directions is wise, and I do that myself. And when it comes to buying precious metals, you want to be working with a good company. And that's why I've partnered with GoldCo. GoldCo is a 6-time Inc. 5000 winner, 2022 Company of the Year, and they've helped people like you and me place over $2 billion in gold and silver. And I have gotten silver from GoldCo. And right now they're offering my supporters up to $10,000 in bonus silver while supplies last. Don't pass this offer up. Go to reasonablegold.com now. This is your opportunity to protect you and your family from an out-of-control government before it's too late. So don't wait a second longer. Take action today. Click on the link in the podcast notes or go to reasonablegold.com now and get your free gold kit, your free IRA kit. You'll be glad you did. So yesterday, while discussing the article about Donald Trump from Time Magazine, we talked about impoundment and noted that Trump had mentioned it at his speech in Waukesha, Wisconsin on Wednesday. And I was scrolling through my normal feed today and someone posted the Trump Agenda 47 video statement that Trump made on impoundment. This is from about a year ago. And I have the sense that that is kind of becoming more a part of conversation and it'll build over the next 6 or 7 weeks as decisions are delivered on the cases heard during this term. Because if the Chevron case goes the way many of us expect it to, that will be a major signal that the administrative state, this entrenched deep state bureaucracy, will realize its expiration date is fast approaching. Not only will that mean that the federal bureaucracy can be torn down, but working right alongside that is Trump's ability and willingness to restrict the funding. So let's take a listen.
Crooked Joe Biden, our disgraced president, has wasted trillions of taxpayer dollars in less than 3 years, causing uncontrolled inflation that is crushing working families. Reining in Biden's wasteful and unnecessary spending is vital to stopping inflation and rescuing our economy from ruin. But the pain of the spending cuts must be borne by the special interests in Washington bureaucrats, not by American families and American seniors in particular. For 200 years under our system of government, it was undisputed that the president had the constitutional power to stop unnecessary spending through what is known as impoundment. Very simply, this meant that if Congress provided more funding than was needed to run the government, the president could refuse to waste the extra funds and instead return the money to the general treasury and maybe even lower your taxes, although we did give you the biggest tax reduction in history and the biggest regulation reduction in history, two things I'm very proud of. And they still are there, although they're disappearing rapidly under Biden. Thomas Jefferson famously used this power, as did many other presidents, until it was wrongfully curtailed by the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, not a very good act. This disaster of a law is clearly unconstitutional, a blatant violation of the separation of powers. When I return to the White House, I will do everything I can to challenge the Impoundment Control Act in court and, if necessary, get Congress to overturn it. We will overturn it. I will then use the president's long-recognized impoundment power to squeeze the bloated federal bureaucracy for massive savings. This will be in the form of tax reductions for you. This will help quickly to stop inflation and slash the deficit. To prepare for this eventuality, on day one, I will order every federal agency to begin identifying large chunks of their budgets that can be saved through efficiencies and waste reduction using impoundment. Of course, this will not include national defense, and unlike Ron DeSanctimonious, who doesn't really know what's happening, I will not lay a finger on Medicare or Social Security. He wants to destroy Social Security and basically obliterate Medicare. These are benefits for our seniors. We are not going to touch it. There are many other things we can do. We're not going to let Ron DeSantis do anything to hurt Medicare or Social Security.
So there are a couple more minutes to that statement. If you want to hear it for yourself, go to DonaldJTrump.com, find the Agenda 47 section, type impoundment in the search bar, and you will be right there. But let's go to Wikipedia and learn just a little bit about this. Again, I cite Wikipedia often, not because it is an authoritative source or the most reliable source. I know it's got its problems, but it also happens to be good at summarizing things, especially when we don't care about any potential political bias. We're going to do our own work and our own discernment so we can get a viewpoint, understand where it comes from, and then still work with that. It's also a great jumping off point to the critical aspects of any issue. So if you have questions while you go through the Wikipedia, well, then you look those subjects up, find out what's going on, and then come back. So the Impoundment Control Act of 1974 refers to Title 10 of the Congressional Budget and Impoundment Control Act of 1974. So let's go down to the impoundment section. Title 10 of the Act, also known as the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, specifies that the president may request that Congress rescind appropriate funds. If both the Senate and the House of Representatives have not approved a rescission proposal by passing legislation within 45 days of continuous session, any funds being withheld must be made available for obligation. Congress is not required to vote on the request and has ignored most presidential requests. In response, some have called for a line item veto to strengthen the rescission power and force Congress to vote on the disputed funds. In late November 2019, the Impoundment Control Act made news during the Trump impeachment investigation. What? As two budget office staffers resigned over their concerns over apparent improprieties regarding the hold of approved Ukraine military funds. Among the concerns was the questionable transfer of decision-making authority to Michael Duffy, a political appointee. Further emails showed that acting Under Secretary of Defense Elaine McCusker emailed the White House Office of Management and Budget expressing her concerns beginning in July 2019 that the White House withholding funds from Ukraine could be violating the Impoundment Control Act. This is part of the basis for the supposed quid pro quo. This is NBC News on January 16, 2020. Trump administration violated the law by withholding Ukraine aid, Government Accountability Office says. In the summer of 2019, the Office of Management and Budget withheld from obligation funds appropriated to the Department of Defense for security assistance to Ukraine, the nonpartisan government watchdog's ruling said. Faithful execution of the law does not permit the president to substitute his own policy priorities for those that Congress has enacted into law. OMB withheld funds for a policy reason, which is not permitted under the Impoundment Control Act. The withholding was not a programmatic delay. Therefore, we conclude that OMB violated the ICA. An Appropriations Act is a law like any other. Therefore, unless Congress has enacted a law providing otherwise, the president must take care to ensure that appropriations are prudently obligated during their period of availability, the decision says. The Constitution grants the president no unilateral authority to withhold funds from obligation. And apparently this includes even for foreign countries. So if the Congress votes to send all our money to foreign countries, the president is not able to stop that under the Impoundment Control Act. That is what is being argued here by the GAO, the Government Accountability Office. Do you see why people wonder that there is a deep state, an entrenched administrative state, prepared always to usurp the power and authority of the president? And not only the president, of course, also the other branches of government. They substitute their rulemaking power in for the court's ability to judge whether or not something is constitutional? That is basically the exact issue before the courts in the Chevron decision. And they have developed countless ways to tie the president's hands. That was one of the biggest issues in that Ukraine impeachment. Witness after witness for the impeachers came up to claim that Donald Trump was not enabling U.S. foreign policy, as if Donald Trump, as president and commander in chief, is not the person who sets and directs our foreign policy. Foreign policy begins with the president. Executive branch agencies do not get to declare what our foreign policy is and then make the president follow that. At least that's not how it's supposed to be. According to NBC, a senior administration official said the GAO's findings, quote, are a pretty clear overreach as they attempt to insert themselves into the media's controversy of the day, end quote, and predicted the agency would have to reverse itself. GAO's opinion would force agencies to spend appropriated funds as quickly as possible before a thoughtful policy process could be completed, the official said. This opinion stretches the legal requirements of the ICA, and following it would be irresponsible. And of course, once the ICA is overturned due to its unconstitutionality, all of these problems would immediately be gone. And just one more note from the NBC article. The ruling was released hours before senators were set to be sworn in for President Donald Trump's impeachment trial. What incredible timing. Imagine trying to impeach a president under the pretense that withholding funds to foreign countries constituted a quid pro quo, but also this guy got 81 million real lawful American votes.
Part of Kyiv in terms of corruption. They made, I'll give you one concrete example. I was, but it just happened to be that was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. So I got Ukraine. And I remember going over convincing our team or others to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference, said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at the time. Well, they made some genuine, substantial changes institutionally and with people.
I mean, we all know how it works by now. They go after Trump and after MAGA for things they themselves do and publicly brag about. And when we point those things out, we are conspiracy theorists. Now, maybe the reason that some of this is coming up right now, and I think it's especially easy to see in this context, is that although everyone just approved of Mike Johnson's package, which we'll discuss further in a little bit, that is not all they plan to do for Ukraine. This is from Zero Hedge on Tuesday. Biden looks to prevent future president from ending Ukraine war with 10-year agreement. And the Zero Hedge article cites the Wall Street Journal last year. This is the excerpt they clipped. The goal is to make sure Ukraine will be strong enough in the future to deter Russia from attacking it again. More immediately, Ukraine's Western allies hope to discourage the Kremlin from thinking it can wait out the Biden administration for a potentially more sympathetic successor in the White House. Western officials are looking for ways to lock in pledges of support and limit future governments' abilities to backtrack, amid fears in European capitals that Donald Trump, if he recaptures the White House, would seek to scale back aid. So that was from last August in the Wall Street Journal. The comedic actor in Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, made a video statement over the weekend. His comments have generated some controversy. Some of those comments are reprinted here. He said, "We are still waiting for the supplies promised to Ukraine. We expect exactly the volume and content of supplies that can change the situation on the battlefield in the interests of Ukraine. And it is important that every agreement we have reached is implemented. Everything that will yield practical results on the battlefield and boost the morale of everyone on the front line." In a conversation with Mr. Jeffries, I emphasized the need for Patriot systems. They are needed as soon as possible. Slowly awakening regime supporter and Elon Musk friend and or fanboy David Sachs highlighted some of Zelensky's comments over the weekend. He said Zelensky announces that Ukraine is working on a security agreement with the U.S. that will fix levels of support for the next 10 years. The $61 billion was just the beginning. The next two U.S. presidents won't be able to switch it off. And here are the comments from Zelensky that he cited. "Also, our teams, Ukraine and the United States, are currently working on a bilateral security agreement, and we are already working on a specific text. Our goal is to make this agreement the strongest of all. We are discussing the specific foundations of our security and cooperation. We are also working on fixing specific levels of support for this year and for the next 10 years, including armed support, financial, political, and joint arms production." And so right there, you have the exact issue over which they tried a get Trump effort in 2019, eventually leading to the Ukraine impeachment hoax. Do you see why Donald Trump and why the American people need this Impoundment Control Act overturned? This is also a necessary tool for Donald Trump if we actually see in reality the potential reality I discussed the other day, which is where Donald Trump has announced the winner of the 2024 rigged election, and we are told that Democrats won down ballot because the people wanted divided government. Everyone pats themselves on the back and says mission accomplished. When Trump is back, start ignoring everything, and we revert right back to 2017, Donald Trump's first term, with a full government-wide subversion going on right in front of our eyes, while we are consumed with any number of distractions and assume that the mainstream media must be telling us things that are sort of true. Speaking of the 2017 distractions, by the way, for everyone who is watching Law & Order New York, The Loudest Hush Money, it's a great episode, don't get me wrong. I don't blame you for watching it. But last night, we got a really interesting tweet from Michael Avenatti, who was Stormy Daniels' old lawyer. He was the guy who was on television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, throughout that big chunk of 2017, when they were trying to convince us that even if Donald Trump hadn't colluded with the Russians, and even if he really did win the election, well, he's still a man who cheats on his wife with porn stars, despite the fact that both of them deny this ever happened. For a few months there, this man was absolutely loved by the uniparty left and basically anyone in the mainstream. Bill Maher used to go on his show and talk about how Michael Avenatti should be the next Democrat candidate for president because he had the personality and the strength and the courage to take Donald Trump on face to face and go blow for blow with this guy that could really deliver a shot. Well, Avenatti sent out a big tweet last night, and I'll get to that in just a second. But to preface that, by the way, this is Mediaite. Avenatti was responding to one of the prosecution's key witnesses, a man named Keith Davidson, and his testimony in the Law & Order New York trial yesterday. Davidson testified in court on Thursday with his version of the events surrounding the supposed hush money payment Trump allegedly made to Daniels in an effort to keep her from speaking about their alleged affair. Davidson told prosecutor Joshua Steinglass that he worked out the hush money deal with Trump's then-lawyer Michael Cohen just days before the election in 2016, but claimed Trump never signed the paperwork. According to Davidson, the paperwork included an unenforceable $1 million penalty for breaching the agreement. They also note that a few weeks ago, Trump thanked Avenatti for speaking up. I think I mentioned that in the podcast, Trump was basically taking Michael Avenatti from the other side onto his side and saying, look who I have on my side, everybody. Well, now Michael Avenatti last night is saying Keith Davidson is lying. After I confronted her with her own text messages, Daniels admitted to me in early 2019 that she and Davidson had extorted Trump in October 2016. It was a shakedown. This was one of the many reasons I fired her as a client in February 2019. Wow. So Trump is the target of extortion? He's not a guy who's trying to hide an affair with a porn star? This trial doesn't seem that real all of a sudden, does it? And wait just a second here. So Michael Avenatti fired Stormy Daniels as a client in February 2019. Now, Michael Avenatti, who knows if you can trust him? I mean, he's in prison for fraud. What was the deal with that whole thing? This is the Associated Press from August 30th of last year, 2023. Court upholds Michael Avenatti's conviction for plotting to extort up to $25 million from Nike. So let's skip like halfway down. In the Nike case, Avenatti was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison in order to pay $260,000 in restitution. Avenatti, 52, is incarcerated at a federal prison near Los Angeles, where he lived and practiced law. His law license is suspended, and he is scheduled to be released from prison in 2036. Wow. According to prosecutors, Avenatti and another lawyer identified in the appellate court's ruling as one-time Michael Jackson lawyer Mark Garagos went to Nike in March 2019, claiming to have evidence from a whistleblower client that the company was paying amateur basketball players. Avenatti demanded that Nike pay a settlement to the whistleblower and hire him and Garagos, quote, to conduct an internal investigation into corruption in basketball, end quote, or they would hold a news conference on the eve of the company's quarterly earnings call to, quote unquote, blow the lid on this scandal. Avenatti told Nike officials that they could either pay him and Garagos $15 million to $25 million to investigate the allegations, or pay him more than $22 million for his silence. All of this, of course, according to the prosecutors. Garagos, who was not charged, later told prosecutors that he felt Avenatti had crossed a line with Nike and expressed to Avenatti that he was, quote, concerned about and uncomfortable with the situation. So Mark Garagos was listed in the article as Michael Jackson's attorney, but he has quite the roster of celebrity clients throughout his career. And there are some pretty weird ones here. Roger Clinton Jr., that is Bill Clinton's brother. The Carradine family, the family of the actor David Carradine, who was said to have hanged himself from his hotel room door. He was the R&B singer Chris Brown's attorney after it was claimed that Brown assaulted his girlfriend at the time, Rihanna. He was Colin Kaepernick's attorney. He was Jussie Smollett's attorney, Jussie Smollett, and Claire Bronfman from the Seagram's dynasty and the Nexium sex cult. The Wikipedia entry on Garagos has a small section about this Nike case. It says Garagos was alleged to have participated in a scheme with attorney Michael Avenatti to extort Nike, but was not charged. At the sentencing hearing, lawyers for Avenatti questioned why Garagos had not been charged. The judge's rationale for reducing Avenatti's sentence was that Garagos was, quote, a central figure in the criminal conduct, end quote, but, quote, suffered no consequences as a result and was not even charged. In November 2019, according to a new indictment filed in Manhattan federal court, conspiracy charges against Avenatti were dropped. The new indictment filed also appears to clear Garagos. So even that case is highly suspect, especially with the timing. He fires Stormy in February 2019, and a month later, he is getting indicted on this very strange fraud case. He tried to swindle Nike in partnership with a guy that represents Colin Kaepernick. Okay. I mean, sure, that is, I guess, something that could happen. But here's the thing. What if the media and the regime just kind of overplayed their hand? What if they thought that Michael Avenatti was the biggest asset they could possibly have in attempting to take down Donald Trump? And hey, maybe all of that was part of some orchestrated plan. And if it was, well, beautifully done. You really sold it well. But it's possible that they realized Avenatti was now going to be able to destroy their credibility completely. And so they called up Mark Garagos and said, hey, man, is there any way we can get this Avenatti guy off the board and just discredit him and basically make him shut up for a while? I mean, pure speculation here, but we are kind of way off the deep end with this thing. And if you feel crazy considering that, think about what it's like inside the heads of normies on the uniparty left and the uniparty right, who think that all these indictments and trials are very, very real, and that Trump is in extreme legal jeopardy. He might be put away in prison for the rest of his life. And at the very minimum, all of America is going to see that he committed all of these crimes and tried to overthrow the government, all based on the big lie. If you're talking about who has the crazy beliefs at this point, it's them. You should remind them of this. They're the ones making baseless claims with no evidence. They're the ones repeating conspiracy theories. They pretended that masks worked. They pretend that Joe Biden received 81 million real lawful American votes. They think absolutely all of this is real all the time. Whenever the media tells them something, they're like, yep, I guess that's so. And here we are, 7 years later, and they can't let go of Stormy Daniels. And I wasn't planning to play this, but let me hammer home that last point just a little harder. This is Axios founder, journalist Jim Vandehei on MSNBC yesterday.
And it might have been TV, it might have been cable TV, a couple stations, and newspapers. But we're mostly looking at the same reality. And over the last decade, that's really shattered into like 20 different pieces. And each one of those pieces defined by your politics, your age, maybe how much you make, what type of job you have, and where you live. And so you could be sitting at a table anywhere, and if, depending on the age and location of people around you, you might not be getting any of the same information on any given day. Like if you're spending your day scrolling through TikTok, the issues you follow, the people that you know, the people that you trust, I wouldn't even know who they are. I don't use TikTok. And that person who uses TikTok might be sitting next to somebody who's on Facebook or Instagram who trusts a news source or an individual that person or I wouldn't be aware of either. And the what happens is that you have a whole lot of different people, many of whom are highly educated. It's not because they're not paying attention or they don't care. They're just living in totally different ecosystems and they're not interacting with same even reality. And the real danger there is very hard now, really, other than like the Super Bowl, where you actually have a whole lot of this country watching the same thing through a very similar lens. And I think, listen, Donald Trump has benefited from this. There's a big chunk of his base that really only consumes content from podcasts that a lot of your viewers have probably never heard of, or not just True Social, but other obscure MAGA-like platforms, websites that would be wholly unfamiliar to them. In those ecosystems, the way they're looking at this trial is he's being persecuted, not prosecuted, right? They look at it like this is just it's Biden is animating it all, and it just gets them more fired up, you know. And there's another side which looks at this for what it is. it's a real case and, you know, a serious case being brought against a former president, and there's a real legal case, there's a jury. And so that, I think, explains why there's so much abusion and often a big lack of trust in what is real. And that's what scared me most over the last couple of years. It used to be people that just weren't paying that close of attention who believed weird stuff. I was highly educated people who I'm like, man, you think that's true? And they do think stuff's true. And that's an issue.
So that's very interesting. He understands that there used to be one voice talking to everyone. Then we had the advent of cable TV and the internet, and people's attention began to become fragmented. And so the regime, to respond to this, needed to make sure that the same voice, different versions of the same story, were pumping through all of those different channels, so that no matter what sort of content someone was consuming, whether someone was reading a fashion magazine or watching ESPN or reading the New York Times, watching reality TV, watching a scripted show or a movie, consuming everything from NFL broadcasts to the Oscars to some music awards show to an afternoon soap opera or a game show, they wanted to make sure that between the commercials and the content itself, they were still reinforcing the truth of the underlying reality that supports the central narrative. And we saw that effect play out throughout COVID. All of the media sources, no matter what view they were expressing, accepted that there was a very real, very deadly pandemic, and that we all have to agree to cooperate in order to get through this. It was blatantly obvious that all of it was coordinated, and that is what helped a lot of people get over their addiction to the central narrative and move on. And now the information is coming from all sorts of sources. People have figured out how to get the information they know they need, rather than passively consuming the information that the regime's corporate outlets are attempting to feed them. Even the fake alternative media, like the Barry Weisses and Bill Maher's of the world, or like the Daily Wire and the Blaze, people are realizing they're supporting the same central narrative, the underlying reality. They all agree that the underlying reality, as revealed by the authoritative source, must be true. Jim Vandehei from Axios is starting to realize that it's not just people he can marginalize, people he can claim are out on the fringes who believe that the whole thing is a lie. I've seen a bunch of clips of mainstream media talking heads discussing how Trump supporters aren't even taking these trials seriously. They're all very upset about this. They don't understand it. They're all busy pitching to their audiences that Donald Trump is going to spend the rest of his years in prison because all of these charges are true, real, legitimate. Donald Trump has committed all sorts of crimes against the country. They've been pushing all these narratives now for nearly 9 years, and this is supposed to wrap it up in the minds of their viewers. They've finally gotten Donald Trump. Now they're realizing not only is that not going to happen, and their audiences are struggling with that, now they're having to incorporate the fact that Trump supporters aren't even taking this seriously. Like, we're making memes and making jokes about it and laughing at these standard issue villagers who can't figure out what's going on. Jim Vandehei is a wannabe elite media figure who is a tool of the uniparty left. He is as establishment gets. As long as the uniparty stays in power, Jim Vandehei and his viewpoint is important. If the uniparty is no longer in power, who needs Jim Vandehei or any of these people? They are totally disconnected from reality, and they think it's us, even while they make wrong decision after wrong decision after wrong decision and wrong prediction after wrong prediction. These people are never right about anything. They live in a false reality. And now they're reaching the point where their own friends, people they know and respect, are no longer going along with it. I mean, imagine being Jim Vandehei at some cocktail party and talking about Joe Biden as president and his chances to win again in 2024. Like, very, very serious. Oh, yes, Joe Biden really could win. I think that he needs to Appeal to suburban women with college educations. He really needs to get into the black community and figure out what it is they really want. Maybe he has to pull back a bit on his immigration claims, knowing that Hispanic voters aren't even expressing the same sentiments they used to about immigration. That's what these people talk about. It is utterly retarded. Imagine being one of those guys at a cocktail party. You're Jim Vandehei now. I know it's impossible to imagine, but you are Jim Vandehei. And your friend is like, come on, Jim. Come on. Joe Biden did not receive 81 million real lawful American votes. We all know that. Just let it go. Oh, you're telling the big lie. Oh, I see you've been swayed by the big lie. Oh, come on, Jim. We all knew we were lying about this the whole time. Just stop doing it. I mean, you're among friends here. We can at least talk about the truth in these environments. If you need to keep lying about it on Axios, go ahead. But you don't have to do it to my face. We both know that Joe Biden didn't receive 81 million real lawful American votes. That's preposterous. The man couldn't fill a schoolyard. I mean, of course he would like to, but he's not allowed at schoolyards. And I imagine we're about to get into one of those phases where some of the edgier mainstream media figures, like perhaps a Barry Weiss or a Ben Shapiro, people who the mainstream pretends are the alternatives, they're going to have to get out and get ahead of these stories so they can try to provide a soft landing, not only for themselves and people like them, but for their audiences so that these people don't lose all their credibility. It's possible that these people, people like Jim Vandehei, really do exist in that informational bubble and nothing from the outside gets in. Maybe their incentive structure, their punishment structure is such that they ignore all that stuff, knowing that they can't incorporate the reality of it if in fact it is true. So they just ignore it. They focus on other things. They pretend we all know that stuff's not true. That's been debunked. But now they're having to wrestle with the fact that people who they know are smart, who they have always respected, are succumbing to all of the disinformation and misinformation and all of these conspiracy theories out there. Even the smart normies are figuring out that it's all been a lie. And of course, Jim Vandehei and people like him still imagine that they are the elites. They are the intellectual elites. But somehow, they are the last people to figure out that all of it has been a lie. And this is easily explainable with the incentive and punishment structure in the party of false decorum. It is also explainable through corruption and compromise, which fall under the same umbrella. But it is nonetheless true that if in reality you are the last person to figure out something that is obvious to everyone else, it is extraordinarily unlikely that you and your friends are the smart ones, especially when the Stormy Daniels trial falling apart is confusing to you. Now, speaking of Get Trump efforts that are falling apart, this is the Daily Caller yesterday. Trump moves to toss Florida indictment based on vindictive prosecution. Former President Donald Trump filed a motion on Thursday to dismiss the Florida classified documents indictment on the grounds of selective and vindictive prosecution. Trump's legal team previously attempted to throw the case out on the basis of the Presidential Records Act, which Judge Aileen Cannon rejected on April 4th. The defense's new motion cites Robert Herr's February report, where the special counsel wrote that, quote, with one exception, there is no record of the Department of Justice prosecuting a former president or vice president for mishandling classified documents from his own administration, end quote. President Donald J. Trump respectfully submits that the indictment must be dismissed on the basis of the office's selective and vindictive prosecution, the motion reads. The exception is President Trump. The basis is his politics and status as President Biden's chief political rival. Thus, this case reflects the type of selective and vindictive prosecution that cannot be tolerated. Accordingly, further discovery and a hearing are necessary, and the superseding indictment must be dismissed. End quote. Skipping down. The DOJ pointed the Daily Caller News Foundation toward its March 7th filing opposing such a motion to dismiss. Trump contends that he has been subject to selective and vindictive prosecution, but he has not identified anyone who has engaged in a remotely similar battery of criminal conduct and not been prosecuted as a result. He has likewise failed to provide any evidence that his indictment was brought solely to retaliate against him for exercising his legal rights rather than because he flagrantly and repeatedly broke the law. Now, that is insane. So that is what Jack Smith responded to the last motion with. The idea that Trump would say, well, I did do all these things that you're accusing me of. Here is an example where someone who did all the things that I did wasn't tried for it. That is really putting the cart before the horse. If the thing Donald Trump is accused of is something no one else has ever been tried for, then that starts seeming pretty selective. And the fact that no one else anywhere has ever been tried for any of this, because Jack Smith is basically just operating on novel legal theories, just like Alvin Bragg was, it gets even that much harder from there. It's funny thinking about Jim Vandehye and all of his smart friends when they see motions like this from the Trump side and they tell themselves, well, yeah, I mean, Jack Smith is right. No one else has done this thing that Donald Trump has done. And it definitely has to be a crime. Joe Biden, you see, he's not responsible for doing the same thing because when he was asked to return those classified records he was mishandling, he just gave them right back. And plus, you know, as Robert Hur says, Joe Biden's too old to be tried. That's what all this is about. And then they just move on as if everything they just said was convincing to everyone or true. It's just what everyone who's on TV and everyone who watches TV and hates Trump agrees to believe together. It's not true. It doesn't stand up to any scrutiny whatsoever. It is just a claim made from the authoritative source and enforced through the incentive and punishment structure within the party of false decorum. You believe it because other people believe it, and you think that it is the socially acceptable belief to have. People are going to stop going along with that eventually when the beliefs become continually and escalatingly more embarrassing. And that is exactly what's happening. Now, for months and months, we have been talking about Mike Johnson's package, which is otherwise known as the unipartisan compromise, and some people honestly feel more comfortable expressing it that way. Now, most of the illegitimate members of the illegitimate Congress gave their approval to Mike Johnson's package just a couple of weeks ago. And with that, they committed the United States to giving away $100 billion of the regime's fiat currency that will be created out of nothing, and then supported by an extension of our own indentured servitude and that of our progeny. We're going to give all that money away. We're going to steal $300 billion from Russians and give that to Ukraine because they have to have something to tide them over for the next 10 years. And we're going to ban TikTok from the app stores if they don't divest from ByteDance, which they already probably did 4 years ago. And oh, what's that? Oh, they left out their border security package, which would just increase the technological surveillance capacity at the border, which could then be turned to the interior right onto us. Yes, please, surveil us all the time. Not that you don't already. And oh yeah, they would provide resources, funds, personnel to facilitate the slave trade at the southern border. And they would tell us that all of that is border security. That, however, was not part of Mike Johnson's package. Now, the border security that should be demanded is that no funding for anything gets passed ever. We don't do anything at all until Joe Biden, the fake president, closes down the border. We are playing only inside of the narrative right now. Obviously, most of this is meaningless nonsense. Aside from at least the lessons we can learn about what governments shouldn't be. Now, ever since then, people have gotten very upset about Mike Johnson's package, particularly those in the uniparty right mainstream and alternative mainstream media. Now, there are a lot of people who I like and respect who are also taking this viewpoint on Mike Johnson, but they are, or at least they claim to be, incensed over Mike Johnson's package. This is just totally out of bounds. Any talk of funding Ukraine for the next 10 years? Totally out of bounds. I haven't heard anything, to be honest, on that illegal aliens voting bill that he talked about with Donald Trump. But the real problem now is that we are being told by all of these people that Mike Johnson is forming some kind of bargain with Democrat minority leader Hakeem Jeffries to keep him in his speakership. The Democrats are going to side with some of the Republicans and keep Mike Johnson as speaker. But the Republicans who pretend to align with America First, they want to take Johnson out. Marjorie Taylor Greene had already submitted a motion to vacate. She was backed by Thomas Massie. They were both backed by Paul Gosar, and the momentum is increasing with this news that Mike Johnson might work with Hakeem Jeffries. Now, I don't want the uniparty left to get anything ever again. I said in 2020, despite being a Democrat voter for my adult life, I said not only will I never vote for another Democrat, I will do everything I can to make sure these people and their agenda are never, ever in power. I did not anticipate a moment, to be fair, when everyone in power was not legitimately in power. So this is obviously a different scenario. But it should be clear that I don't want to empower that agenda in any way whatsoever. That said, the idea that Mike Johnson is empowering that agenda and that we are going to be told that by people who did not object to the thoroughly uncertifiable electors in 2020, people who have supported Joe Biden's legitimacy, people who have voted for funding of the wars in Ukraine or Israel or elsewhere, I'm going to listen to them tell me who's working with the uniparty left? No. Sorry, gonna pass on that. Am I defending Mike Johnson? I don't know. Be the judge of that for yourself. Does it sound like I'm defending Mike Johnson? If it does, I think you're misreading me. But what I'm not going to do is participate in the angry info op that is supposed to get us very fired up about getting rid of Mike Johnson. I don't care if we get rid of Mike Johnson or not, because the whole thing is a charade. If these people were interested in accomplishing anything on behalf of their constituents, they should have never put a Speaker of the House in this position in the first place. They should have just gone without a speaker for over a year. There's no funding that could ever possibly be good for the American people. None of what they do is legitimate. They themselves cannot prove their own legitimacy. And sending legislation over to an illegitimate Senate to then eventually be signed by an illegitimate president is a total exercise in futility. All of it is fake. So I don't care what happens to Mike Johnson. I'm certainly not going to get upset about it because I'm told he's working with Democrats by people who have worked with Democrats for their entire career and were put in office by the uniparty's election rigging. I have said for well over 6 months that I didn't think Mike Johnson was going to complete his term as speaker. I have said for a long time, I think it'll be either Hakeem Jeffries or Liz Cheney. I think we are going to see the uniparty on full display. I think we should welcome it. Let's just please accelerate. Let's show everybody what the score really is. So I am not surprised by this. I am not bothered by this. Having a little R next to your name is no different than having a little D next to your name. To the extent that these people are in office because the uniparty put them there, they are already substantially anti-Trump. Trump's election and then that transition to the Trump administration, the peaceful transfer of power by the illegitimate uniparty government that is there now, does not rest on Mike Johnson remaining speaker for the rest of the year. It does not rest on a Republican Congress. And if it did, we would already be lost. You have to understand that. These illegitimate uniparty representatives are not there to protect the country from Democrats. They are what the country must be protected from. They're not going to bail us out at the end. We need to get over these notions, which means we also do not subject ourselves to the anger and nonsense of these narratives. I'm not saying that everyone pushing for Mike Johnson's speakership to be vacated is then therefore the enemy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying you step back, you realize that both sides are full of shit here, and you wait and see. You allow your rational brain to adjudicate this for you rather than your emotions. Let's take a look at this article from Politico today. Why Johnson is stuck with threats to end his speakership. Speaker Mike Johnson will likely escape Marjorie Taylor Greene's first attempt to fire him. The threat of an ouster vote will still haunt him all year long. Despite near universal consensus in the House that allowing any one member to force a snap vote on booting a speaker is a recipe for chaos, lawmakers in both parties are increasingly acknowledging that they have almost no chance of changing that rule before January. It's not for a lack of interest. In fact, the idea was brought up in GOP meetings as recently as this week. But Johnson is boxed in from both sides. He can't change the rules with only Republican votes because of the rebels on his right flank, who insist that former Speaker Kevin McCarthy empower them by allowing a single lawmaker to force a vote of no confidence. And Democrats, while they're ready to save him from Green's first ejection attempt next week, are clear that their mercy won't necessarily be permanent if the Georgia firebrand or someone else tries again. They also have little political incentive to give Johnson more permanent protection unless he opens up broader negotiations about potential power sharing in the House. That price is too steep for the Speaker to pay. It leaves Johnson almost powerless to officially defang one of the biggest threats to his leadership, even as he's criticized the low threshold to vote on ousting a Speaker as having harmed his office and the majority, and opens the door for more disgruntled colleagues to try and force a showdown with him in the months to come. Not to mention that most Republicans doubt that Johnson or Democrats have much to gain by picking a fight over changing the rule. With a little over 6 months left before the next round of leadership races, a growing number of Republicans are already predicting that Johnson wouldn't win the top spot again if he runs. Trying to protect the speakership from his disgruntled hardliners only invites more of them to lash out, making the speaker's future path to stay in leadership even tougher. The internal backlash over a potential change to the speaker deposing rules is already hitting Johnson, thanks to preemptive threats from some conservatives that they'd side with Green in favor of firing him if he pursues such a change. Representatives Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, in particular, both warned Johnson late last month that they could support an ouster if he attempted to reform the motion to vacate. On the other side, Democrats are already planning to make it harder to fire a speaker if they win back the House in January. Until then, they see the onus as on Republicans to come forward with an offer to fix a GOP-created problem. Plus, Democrats can identify the political reality. More GOP chaos on display can only help them on the campaign trail. I'm not a cheap date. It's not our job to bail out the Republicans every time they want to overthrow their speaker, said Representative Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, Democrat. He made clear that deal-making would be necessary for multiple Johnson salvage votes, adding that if it gets to that point, that's a discussion he and Hakeem have to have. That is not the position of all Democrats. Representative Greg Kassar of Texas said, "I would see that as another move to help Mike Johnson, who supported overturning the election and has been an apologist for crazy right-wing ideas in the country." And the article goes on. Most of the rest of that article is focused on whether or not the rule should stay as it is, the one vote motion to vacate. They would probably like to get rid of that and then get a uniparty speaker put in place, because that'll eliminate all their problems in the scenario where they're actually able to replace Mike Johnson. Now, again, I'm not saying that the people trying to get rid of Mike Johnson are bad. This is just part of the stage show that we are being forced to watch until people get to the point where they understand the media, the television, the newspapers are not trying to tell them the truth, and this illegitimate government does not get to control everybody's lives. But you have to think it's coming at some point. And if and when that time comes, it will be better to have stayed emotionally detached from this so that we can remain rational, recognize the patterns of the emotional influence being applied. It's not just the media, it's the politicians. They are part of the stage show. You've witnessed the narratives about war becoming more dramatic and more emotionally manipulative when they want more money for wars. You're watching the quote-unquote pro-Hamas protests while they're pushing for censorship of anti-Semitism. You watched the media and politicians who haven't addressed illegal aliens in years and years all of a sudden highlighting every single illegal alien issue when they want to pass a big border security package. Now, I'm open to the argument that the displays of emotionality can and do serve a positive purpose at times, but for us, we should be in the mindset where we don't allow it to affect us. Because there are plenty of stories out there that we hear every day that if we believe them and if we respond to them emotionally, well, that could lead to very bad consequences in the real world, despite the story's not even being true or relevant. Like today, there were headlines about how U.S. jets were scrambled to intercept a Russian nuclear bomber that flew over Alaskan airspace. You see that as a headline in the Daily Mail? That's pretty provocative. You think, oh no, what if we're on the verge of nuclear war? Russia is going to nuke us and we're all going to die. Let's send all our money to Ukraine. Oh, they have Nazis over there? Well, you know, we're just going to have to work with those Nazis to make sure Russia doesn't nuke us. Oh, wait. That would make us the Nazis now? Wait a second. We don't want... Russia's going to nuke us, though, right? Well, all right. I mean, if Russia's going to nuke us, I guess we're going to have to be Nazis. But wait a second. What is this down here in the article? NORAD, in a statement, confirmed the jets were observed in the Alaska Air Defense Identification Zone, which is a buffer zone outside U.S. sovereign airspace. The Russian aircraft remained in international airspace and did not enter American or Canadian sovereign airspace, the statement said. This Russian activity in the Alaska ADIZ occurs regularly and is not seen as a threat. Oh, wow. Thank goodness we didn't go and worry about Russia nuking us and then send Ukraine all our money, just billions and billions of dollars, because we were told that Russia was going to nuke us. Oh, wait, we already did that? We already sent them hundreds of billions of dollars and weapons and intel? And we trained Nazi battalions and little terrorist cells over there? Our CIA did that? But at least we shot down tons of their fighter jets back at the beginning. I mean, not we, but the Ghost of Kiev. Oh, wait. That was video game footage. That's right. That wasn't real. Well, hey, at least we have that spring counteroffensive to look forward to, or that spring-summer counteroffensive, or that summer counteroffensive. Oh, wait. That was last year? And we were told a National Guardsman just leaked all of our secret military plans on the internet? Well, at least they still have a very capable, very legitimate president in the comedic actor Volodymyr Zelensky. And sure, it seems like he has a cocaine habit, but at least he's really good at his job and has full control over the military. He's an expert military strategist, you see. Oh, wait, they tried to overthrow him not more than a couple of months ago? Well, I mean, at least he's still a legitimate president. I mean, I know that he banned opposition political parties, And he canceled that election, but sure, his term lasts for another couple of weeks. And after that, I mean, who knows what happens? I mean, does anybody know what happens when a president's term expires after he has banned elections and his country just isn't really a country anymore? Well, I know all of that's weird, but at least we stopped sending them all those Oh, no, wait. Just a couple of weeks ago, they passed another $61 billion for Ukraine. Well, sure. Okay. All of that is weird, but at least Russia hasn't nuked us yet. I mean, if all of that makes sense to you and you are still on board with the Ukraine thing, you would fit right in with Jim Vandehei's friend group. But if you're not an emotionally stunted standard-issue villager with a child-sized brain rattling around in your full-size adult human skull like so many maracas, you will realize that conditioning yourself not to respond emotionally to what you see on TV and read on your phone is a far superior path to rational, intelligent decision-making. And unless you really are part of Jim Vandehei's friend group and you just can't imagine ever leaving Jim Vandehei's friend group, you might want to consider that training yourself to remain emotionally detached from all of this nonsense is going to become a really productive habit in your mental and emotional life. Because if we are not able to become emotionally detached to the nonsense that is thrust in our direction every single day, well, bad things can happen. The polling organization Rasmussen released this yesterday. Civil War II, many voters think it's likely. The possibility that America could face another civil war soon is not too far-fetched for a lot of voters. The latest Rasmussen Reports National Telephone and Online Survey finds that 41% of likely U.S. voters believe the United States is likely to experience a second civil war sometime in the next 5 years, including 16% who consider such a scenario very likely. So 1/6, according to Rasmussen, 1/6 of the people in this country think that it is very likely that we will end up in another civil war. Such discussions got a boost after the new movie Civil War made its debut as number one at the box office last month. 37% of voters believe another civil war is more likely to happen if President Joe Biden wins this year's election, while 25% think another civil war is more likely if former President Donald Trump wins. The Daily Mail reporting on that poll noted that fully 54% of GOP voters saw a civil war breaking out by 2029, and that Republicans were more likely to think a civil war will happen than Democrats. And there's also this from the Daily Mail article. Louis Marinelli, the president and founder of Yes California, which wants the Golden State's coastal area to break away, says the U.S. could well be headed for a civil conflict. The coming civil war will be fought between people of this country based on ideology, Marinelli told DailyMail.com. We have two diverging and incompatible sets of values in this country that can no longer exist. And though I might agree with him about varying sets of ideology that can't really coexist, that is a problem that is created in full by the global regime's agenda and their control over the flow of information. That control is being taken away, as is their power to create that sort of division. People are coming to understand that it is the agenda that creates the division. The division is a necessary product. It is an intended outcome of their agenda because they are able to exploit those divisions to destabilize society and seize greater power for themselves in the fallout. I've discussed many times that I do not believe civil war is on the way. In fact, I think we're going through all of this specifically to avoid that sort of outcome. Civil wars are part of the regime's playbook. They have played them out over centuries all across the world, and they were responsible for starting the civil war here. It wasn't just everyone got mad at their neighbors over slavery, so they started shooting each other. And it wasn't about weird street protests getting out of control and then people taking things into their own hands, which ended up in a war. even the premises on which we would have a civil war are part of the manipulation. The solution is to do your part in making sure that these narratives and the controlled opposition dynamics these narratives are designed to create fail right out of the gate. It isn't that hard. They're all bullshit. They're all obviously bullshit. But we've all been conditioned to think our side's bullshit is preferable to theirs. Therefore, we should do everything we can to support our side's bullshit. That is never going to work. And let me close the week out with this, because I saw a video of Boris Johnson walking through the streets today attached to this ridiculous narrative I am about to share with you. And I was just truly stunned to be given such a perfect example of complete and total nonsense. This is the BBC this morning. Boris Johnson turned away from polling station after forgetting ID. And you see Boris Johnson walking down the street. Oh no, Boris Johnson got turned away to vote. He is just so immediately recognizable. An internationally recognizable public government figure from the UK. Everybody knows who Boris Johnson is, and even he couldn't vote without a voter ID. Just think, that must be the safest and most secure election that anyone has ever voted in. Just the voter ID alone, the fact that Boris Johnson could get kicked out of the polling place. Gosh, that election must be perfect. As first reported by Sky News, he returned later with the necessary ID and was able to vote. Oh, thank goodness. He cast his ballot in South Oxfordshire, where voters are choosing a police and crime commissioner. New rules requiring photo ID were introduced by Mr. Johnson's government in the Elections Act 2022. The change was rolled out last year, with local elections in May 2023, the first time voters needed to show ID. According to the Electoral Commission, about 14,000 people were unable to vote in last year's local elections in England as a result of the new rules. My God, voter suppression. Were they all black? Or no? There are 22 acceptable forms of ID, including passports, driver's licenses, older or disabled persons' bus passes, and Oyster 60 plus cards. Don't know what Oyster cards are? Not going to look it up. People who are registered to vote can also apply for a free document known as a voter authority certificate. The government has also said it intends to make veterans' ID cards a valid form of voter identification after some former service personnel were turned away from polling stations. Now, I'm not here to give you any opinion about voter ID in the UK, something I am generally not concerned at all about because it's their country and not mine. But we should see this for exactly what it is. And what it is a PR campaign. In fact, at the end of the article, Electoral Commission Chief Executive Vijay Rangarajan, I hope I'm saying that right, told BBC Radio 4's Today program that large-scale campaigns to raise awareness of the rules appear to have been successful. Many of the people quoted in the article are saying they're having a few problems here and there, but by and large, everything is working just great. Everything with this new voter ID program is wonderful. And they are going to broadcast to the entire nation that the election is going just fine. We are seeing it across the entire world. And what that tells us, what this is designed to tell us when it's being put out by global propaganda media outlets like the BBC, literal state regime media, an outlet and organization intimately involved with the Trusted News Initiative, working with the tech companies to censor, all of it. They are showing the world that their elections are safe and secure. Even Boris Johnson can be refused the opportunity to vote if he doesn't bring his ID. They even have someone who knows Boris letting you know that, oh yeah, that's something that Boris would definitely do. You know how it is with leaders of nations. They just leave their IDs, their wallets, whatever, at home. They're not responsible for those things. They have minions for that. But the ultimate takeaway is that elections are secure, Even Boris Johnson could be turned away from voting if he doesn't have an ID. That is the message that goes out. That is what the normie brain takes in. Surface level interpretation of this, Boris Johnson, ha ha ha, he wasn't allowed to vote. He had to go back home and get his ID. That means they're checking everybody. Even internationally recognized figures are being prevented from voting if they forget their ID. That is the normie brain surface level interpretation. But then you have to ask, why are they telling me that? And that answer might not become immediately obvious. But what you should realize, no matter what, is that this is a coordinated PR campaign to make people believe that their elections are safe and secure based on voter ID. They want everybody to know that everybody's getting checked. That is why this story exists. And if you go just a step beyond that, you'll realize that the likelihood that Boris Johnson would go without his ID to vote in an election for a police commissioner and be turned away and then come back to vote is extraordinarily unlikely. This was almost definitely coordinated, scripted, and then choreographed to get this story out to the public as a PR campaign. And understanding that, on some level, you should understand that this is fake. They are trying to achieve a result. They are trying to get people to believe a certain thing about their elections. That is what this is for. Because the likelihood of all of this just being natural, organic, coincidental is very, very low. I would say it's damn near impossible, but people think that's going too far. I don't believe it is because I see things exactly like this happening all the time. And in this scenario, because it seems like it doesn't mean all that much, and it is pretty overtly nothing more than a PR campaign, people are willing to say, oh yeah, that's fake. But the thing is, the standard by which you would be calling this fake is the same standard by which I call many other things fake that people get upset about. And the difference in judgment from me to you, from one story to the other story, is the assessment of how important a story is, or how dramatic the claims are, or some totally capricious assessment that the media wouldn't lie about something like that, or that politicians who would be in a position to know the truth wouldn't lie about something like that. But why? Right here in this story, you have a politician and the media trying to deceive people about the security of their elections. And yes, the example they are using to illustrate this point seems relatively unimportant. It's just one vote. And Boris went home and got his ID and then voted. So no harm, no foul. But this story exists to manipulate public opinion about the safety and security of elections. And the story is fake. It's fake, and it's about something important. If you understand it's fake, you take its power away from it immediately. If you think it's real, you empower the regime to steal more elections. We will leave it there for this week. I will be back on Monday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree. Linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
It's high noon!
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'myourmoderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's high!